So we had ourselves a storm last night.
Yeah, it's good that it's good to hear you. It sounded a little bit fierce.
Well, I guess I understood the seriousness when I got a text message from our electricity company warning us about that we may lose our electricity. So, yeah, we didn't though.
Oh, great.
But 20,000 other people or families did.
Yeah, I saw. Is it quite usual to lose your electricity during a storm?
Well, these storms, we had it last Christmas as well. And yeah, many people did, but not usually, I guess.
I mean, if you think about the last 5 years, maybe, like how many times has the electricity actually gone out where you live?
At our place, not due to the storm at my place,
Okay.
but just a planned thing, a couple of times.
Oh, like they say, oh, we're doing some maintenance, so you won't have power for a day or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Huh. Well, I'm glad no one seems to have been injured. I looked, and the news said, like, yeah, okay, some people lost power and some roads are blocked with fallen trees and some cars are up to their bumpers in water and blah, 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 but nobody hurt, which seems like a pretty good outcome.
Yeah, and I think almost everyone has their power back.
That's good. We got to take the power back. Or, just wait until it's given back to us, depending on how the mood takes the authorities, I guess.
To be honest, I'm actually a bit impressed by how like we tackled this weather.
Yeah? Do you think it was unusually competently handled?
I don't know what unusually, but I just thought that it's probably it's a sign that we perhaps are used to it, which is I don't know, the climate change and all that.
Right.
Well, we had storms before, but yeah, this seems to be more regular now.
Is there like a set of equipment that you have? Like, do you have like a torch and some matches and some candles? And like, does everybody have that?
I guess, but it's not necessarily a conscious thing. Like, oh, we have to be prepared.
Okay.
It's not like that. We
It's not like
just
living
have
in
it.
California.
It's more due to the
Everything is cautiously meant, but we simultaneously also we're prepared for a yeah
Yeah.
an outage. I like it. That's good. It's two for one.
How is the UK or Scotland in storms? Are you prepared?
I think the Western Isles of Scotland get a lot of weather and a lot of storms, and I think they're mostly okay. Like, yeah, I think they lose power sometimes, but it comes back, and I think it's a little bit like Western Norway. It's just sort of one of those things that's going to happen sometimes. I actually don't know whether they got this storm. I think maybe it went over the top of the UK a little bit, so maybe they missed the worst of it. Generally speaking, we've had storms and flooding, a lot of flooding in the UK the last few years, and people have not people. Sorry, that's a very poor word to use here. I think generally, the country has not coped very well with being deluged in rain, like at all. And there have been lots of times when people have lost electricity, their homes have got flooded when rivers flooded, farms have got flooded, farmland has been covered in water for weeks at a time. There's been landslides, lots of kind of, we are not equipped for this kind of level of rain problems, which is not great. We're not super good at coping, generally as a nation on average. I don't think we're super good at coping with extreme weather. So when it does happen, and it has happened with the rain anyway, quite a lot the last few years, it's been difficult for people to manage. And by people, I don't mean like, you know, regular people in their houses. I mean, sort of, it's been difficult for the people who manage the organization of kind of chaos situations to cope with it. Not being terribly well prepared, perhaps.
Yeah, because I guess you have to build some kind of infrastructure, or yeah, you have to have some people who deal with it.
And, yeah. But like, it's so sort of it has been historically kind of, I guess, unpredictable and rare. So you don't just have a bunch of people standing by waiting to, you know, to parachute them down onto whatever just got rained on. I don't think it works like that. So yeah, we're not amazing at mobilizing in the face of big weather.
Because we have something called Sivilforsvaret. Do you have that in the UK?
I don't think so. Tell me what it is.
It's like the civil defense. So I should know how this works. But I didn't serve in the military, so I don't. But I think that you can be sort of enrolled in it. And then when there are storms or anything of catastrophe or something, you have to sort of go out and deal with it.
We have a thing. Yeah. We have a thing called the Territorial Army, which is kind of a branch of the armed forces for people who have sort of regular lives and regular jobs, but maybe on weekends and in their spare time, put time in at a sort of military standard. I don't know whether they would be called in for these kinds of circumstances.
I just did a bit of Googling, Sivilforsvaret, the civil defense, you are, when you serve, everyone in Norway, men and women, have something called tjenesteplikt, which is, you have to serve in the military, or you are supposed to have to, and most of us today don't, because we don't sort of prioritize the military as much anymore.
As a country.
Yeah. So I think more and more don't have to do that, but if you do, you may be sort of delegated to the civil defense, and then you I think you pretty much have to go out and deal with stuff when it occurs.
How does that even work? Like, did you have to deliberately sign a form that said, I'm not going to do this, or were you just never called on, or is it like Starship Troopers, where you sit a test and they go, yeah, sorry, no, or yes, we've decided that you belong in the PsyOps division, or like, what even happens?
So when you are, I think when you are 16 or something, you are called in on what we call a session or a session, and then they test you like physically and some sort of knowledge test, cognitive test, and you get a score, and if your results are like under you are not fit for the service, right? And if you do score enough, you may be called in to serve a year. But then there are all these strategies to ensure that you don't score high enough on this test. Or if you got some kind of physical condition, you can get your doctor to write up a notice that this person isn't fit for any meaningful warlike scenario.
Are they really screening for people who could go to war, or is the bar a bit lower than that?
Well, I guess it's lower, but I've heard that the pressure to volunteer for to serve like in Afghanistan and stuff are pretty present in the military.
Right. So if you're in, you're really in it.
Well, I can't really say because I haven't done it myself, but yeah, it sounds kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess don't go and sign up to anything like that if you can't live with the possible consequence of being sent to war.
But, like, serving out is that it is voluntary, so you're not forced to do it, but I guess you are encouraged to do it. And these are like 18-year-old young people, so and you got the whole indoctrination thing when you come to the military base, and yeah.
Indoctrination's a loaded word.
It is, but, well, it is indoctrination, I guess.
Well, you need to create an esprit de corps, right? Like, you don't want, yeah, there's some things you don't want, I guess, as someone running a military. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to respect authority and to be a part of the troop and stuff like that. So yeah,
we can. Yeah, there's a whole other conversation in this some other time. Yeah. The UK used to have national service of the kind that you're describing. I think they stopped it in maybe the early 60s or something. Mm. It's a long while ago now. So we don't, you know, it's strictly at this point strictly opt in terms of things like the territorial army, and that's a. That is, depending on who you talk to, I guess, that's a sort of, like, very, very serious commitment. And you could be signed up, you know, you could be sent overseas to fight. I guess it's not necessarily viewed that well by people serving professionally in the military full-time. But yeah, that's as much as we've got. And I don't know whether they get drafted when something like this happens, when storms happen. So, sorry, yeah, circling back to the whole thing. You had a storm. And people in the civil Fosfar, was it?
Yeah, civil defense.
They're sent there to do work, I guess.
Yeah, we always see them on TV when there are, for example, floods. They are the one with the sandbags.
Right.
But
and they're thinking, man, I'm really glad I got that master's degree.
Yeah. No sandbagging.
Yeah. Or... Indeed.
So, it's Christmas. Or
it is Christmas.
The holidays, to be politically correct.
Yeah. Yeah, happy belated Christmas. I'm pretty sure that's not a thing we say in the UK, but I've just coined it, so whatever. Yeah. Did you have a nice one?
Yeah, we did. We and Team Pinochet gathered around the table to...
Excellent.
...to eat some.
Hmm. And talk trash about ribba, I guess.
Yeah, lots of trash talk about ribba. Yeah. And we waited all night for the gifts, and we unwrapped the gifts, and we were grateful. And then we... Yeah, I guess we went to bed.
That sounds like a good evening. And that's on the 24th, right?
Yeah,
that's Yulafton.
Yeah. Correct, Yulafton.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve. Did you have a Christmas Eve, or did you have a Christmas Day?
Well, this is the perpetual bone of contention in our house. So growing up in a half-Czech household, Christmas for us was on the 24th, you know, like a gentleman. But the British thing to do is to celebrate on the 25th. And so my husband always did presents at home on the 25th. And I don't like that because I like it to be all kind of cozy and... You know, hygge, basically, in the evening, and you've got candlelight, and it's kind of atmospheric, and you've got all that. But it turned out anyway that he's not been very well. He caught this horrible cold that is going around, and that everybody has. So he spent the whole time feeling a little bit sorry for himself. So we had a very, very low key Christmas, which mostly involved cooking on Christmas Day, and we had beef in the end. I tried to make a beef Wellington. This did not work out great. It turns out that's actually quite difficult to do. So I did what any self-respecting Scot would do, and I cut it up and I fried it.
What's a beef Wellington?
Beef Wellington is when you get a big piece of beef and you wrap it in pastry. I think you sear it. Yeah, you sear it on the outside first, and you kind of then you wrap it in pastry, and then you put it in the oven for a while. But it didn't cook quite how it was expected.
It sounds very British.
I know, it's like somehow the most British name, right? It was the first time I'd ever tried to make it. It did not turn out particularly great, hence the slicing and frying afterwards, which worked just fine.
So now I must admit I'm a bit disappointed, because we had a conversation about you having either pinachot or ribba.
Yeah, we chickened out in the end. I think we just went to the store to look. We were super unprepared this year.
I think you beefed out.
Oh. Oh.
It's not too late.
And recovering from that. It's not too late?
No, you can do it perhaps for New Year's.
We could. Because he wasn't very well, we were kind of a little unprepared, so we did some ad hoc shopping, and that was the beef was just what we felt like at the time.
But before you chickened out, what were you leaning towards? The pork or the sheep?
I think I'm a pinchot girl, to be honest. I love pork, but yeah, I don't know. We'll have to have both. I'm sure there's probably a sale on now. We can go and buy both at half price and try both and do a proper scientific taste test.
Yeah, indeed. The ribba is wickedly cheap now.
Really? Great.
Now it's like the cheapest meat you can buy now. So, yeah, you can make both. You can wrap pinachot in ribba if you want to make.
Like a turducken.
Yeah, exactly.
But you really want to put some lutefisk on the inside, right?
Yeah, exactly. To sort of pad it with lutefisk.
Oh. This is the kind of talk that's going to get me thrown out of your country.
Me too, I guess.
No, you're allowed to stay here. You'd be stateless otherwise, and that's not. I understand that's not allowed, but I can be sent back where I came from. Please don't. I like it here.
Yes, so because I was curious, because pinachot, you have to water it down, which isn't a typical thing to do with meat.
You do what now?
You have to water it down. So like 12 hours before you want to have the meal, you should soak it in water, because it's very, very, very salty.
Hmm.
And if you don't, you're gonna have yourself a surprise when you put it on the table.
Has it been completely dried out? Is that why they're soaking?
Yeah, and salted.
Mm.
Basically, so like yeah, so it's your typical preservant method.
Like you would salt fish, same kind of thing, right?
Yeah, same kind of thing. And there is this typical. So every Christmas there are newspaper articles about what if you forgot to soak the sheep's rib, the pinachot.
And there is an emergency procedure that you can follow?
You can use some lukewarm water and shower it a lot and stuff.
That's not exactly a life hack, really. Like that's the best they've got.
So yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, this is good that we're having this conversation now, and I'm not coming to you saying, well, I tried to make, pinchotman, but it didn't.
Also,
it went wrong.
Yeah, you don't boil it, you steam it, right? So in the shops, you can buy these birch wood sticks that you lay on in the bottom of the pan and fill up with water and lay the meat over that again.
So you're having like a little sheep sauna.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Sheep sauna title.
Wow. Right. Indeed.
There's a whole procedure with the ribba as well.
Surgical or other?
It's almost surgical, but googling for the English term for the Norwegian word svor. Do you know it? Svor? Have you entered that
no,
in your...
I have not. Educate me. Again.
Ah, rind.
Rind.
The pork's rind. Yeah, the pork's rind. So the whole deal with ribba is that the pork rind should be crunchy, right?
Right. This is a thing that we do in the UK with pork.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called crackling.
Crackling, exactly. And if the rind isn't crackling, that's you're gonna have a bad year, all right?
Oh wow! So it's not just like a bad dinner; it's like setting you up for a failure for the whole of the next 365 days.
Well, I just found that up, but yeah, it's a catastrophe. You don't mess with the rind, and wow. Yeah, there are also newspaper articles about how to ensure that the rind is crackling.
This is some pretty high stakes kitchen action here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I've come to this country prepared for the level of pressure that falls on the shoulders of the cook.
Well, we have a year of practice now.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to the whole way through the year, yeah.
The first Christmas is what do we call it? Free-for-all? Or no? Yeah.
Like you get a free pass the first
free
time
pass,
and then...
Yeah, the first time.
Right. Okay, right, I'm going to practice. I'm going to the sales tomorrow and I'm going to buy like half-price pinochet and I'm just going to keep going until I can do it.
Pinochet is actually pretty easy to do.
And maybe I should start with that. Build up. Okay.
Yeah, so you didn't have a proper Norwegian Christmas Eve dinner?
We basically fail. Can I blame my husband? That seems kind of... He's not here to defend himself. That seems kind of mean.
You can blame your sick husband. That's okay.
Okay.
But you did have a taste of the Norwegian Christmas Eve ritual, right?
Time out. What kind of ritual are we talking about here?
Well, there are certain things you have to do that day. Certain things you have to watch, perhaps. This is a leading question.
It is a very leading question. It's a good leading
Did you watch any TV?
We did. We watched Tre Nøtter til Askepott, which is, I think we talked about last time, so I don't have to talk about that at length. And not only did we do that, but we did it while eating julegrøt.
Ah, so you had porridge.
We did, with cinnamon and butter.
That's great.
So I really couldn't... I hope that kind of ticks the box for like how Norwegian we tried to be on Christmas Eve. And the movie was really fun. It was really sweet. So to recap, it's this Czech-German collaboration movie from 1973. It's Cinderella, who is called Askepott in Norwegian. And it's played by this lovely girl who's like the Czech Natalie Portman. She's got just so much game. Way, way more than, like, literally anyone else in the movie. The handsome prince in the movie, like, he won't last 5 minutes. She'll destroy him.
He is what you could call a wuss, right?
He's a fop in kind of... Yeah, he does not come off well. But I guess she's improved her situation by the end of the movie, shall we say, so it works out well for her.
He's privileged.
That would be one word for it. but yeah, this one guy does all the narration into Norwegian, which is Knut someone, actually, but I forget his surname, and he's very good. He's amusing without it being pantomime.
Yeah, he's doing voices.
Yeah, but not too much, just a little bit.
You're sick. Jeg har med noe til deg. Tenk at nå det 3 år siden jeg fikk deg, far.
I was amused and charmed.
Will you watch it next year?
That's a good question. Maybe. The thing that was really strange for me during it was that it's not that he's completely talking over the top, so there's no... It's not a total excision of the Czech that's underneath. So sometimes you hear bits of the Czech breaking through, and that was singularly strange for me as someone who understands at least a little bit of Czech. So I was getting that, and then I was getting the Norwegian on top. And sometimes they matched well, and sometimes they didn't. And sometimes I only got half of the sentence in one, and half of the sentence in the other. And it was a very, very odd experience all around.
Do you imply that the Norwegian and the Czech version sort of isn't the same?
I think reasonable artistic license was taken. I you know, there was no glaring error. It was more just some subtleties were lost.
So I mentioned last time that the execution of the fox, or the hunting of the fox, was cut out in the Norwegian version. Did you watch that on YouTube? I think I added a link to it in the show notes for the last episode.
I did watch it, possibly against my better judgment, and it was... I can see why they cut it. If this is a country where people generally like nature and like foxes, it's not supremely bloody, but it doesn't really pull any punches either.
Because you come from a country where fox hunting is perhaps a bit... not that controversial, or
it's
is it?
Hugely controversial.
It is, okay. Says the guy from the whale hunting country, but okay, okay.
Yeah, whales needs to go on the list. Actually, we need to go on the list collectively. I don't even know where to put that. Is it under the food section? I guess it's under the food section. If you wanted to make a very crude sketch about the way that... I can't find the food section. Oh, there it is. The way that people's attitudes break down about fox hunting in the UK, it's broadly that people who live in the country are pro and people who live in cities are against. It's more nuanced than that, invariably, but that's the kind of the coarse cartoon of it, if you like.
And which side are you on?
Oh, I'm urban as. No question. It's the manner of the dispatch of the fox. Like, I eat meat, so it's not like I'm coming from moral high ground in that way, but the process is, I think, cruel. Is that a thing that people do here? I mean, I imagine farmers might shoot foxes, but do they chase them on horses?
No, I don't think so. Norwegian hunting is mostly deer, I think, and moose. I don't think fox hunting is that, but I don't think foxes are that common here.
Right.
We have also, them, but yeah.
They're not for eating. Like, apparently they don't even taste nice.
No. But we have like fox farms, right? For
the fur.
Yeah.
Right.
Which also is a bit controversial, I guess.
Yeah. Same in the UK, yeah. I think. Some people wear fur, some people no.
As for the controversy, I think wolves are more controversial in Norway. Because sheep farmers, they have some problems with the few wolves, wild wolves that exist in our fauna.
I read about this. Yeah. I read that there was this, that the government had taken a position on this, that there are like 50 wild wolves or something left in Norway. It's not a large number. It's barely enough to kind of sustain themselves as a population. Mm-hmm. And that they were looking to allow farmers to cull them more liberally than would be good for the survival of the remaining wolves. I felt really uncomfortable about that. I think they're amazing animals. I get that they threaten farming, but is that the way forward?
If you ask me, no, I don't think so. But it's difficult, right? Because I don't think that the sheep farmers are like not careful, or they don't care about your herd and stuff like that. But also, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed a little cruel. I don't know, I like wolves.
I
don't have t-shirts with them on or anything, but I like them. Oh, one more point about Tre Nøtter, well, Askepott, I guess I should call it, since apparently everyone does. The restoration of the film was done by NRK and some other people in Iceland and Liechtenstein, And my husband and I looked at each other when reading this and said, does that mean that those countries watch this movie at Christmas too?
I don't know. To be honest.
Questions must be asked. All right. We can leave that. I was just curious.
I thought it was a Norwegian, what's called the fancy word? Idiosyncrasy? No.
Good guess. Idiosyncrasy.
Add that to the list.
Right.
I think I just revealed my academic past there. And
if in doubt, add another three syllables.
Sidebar. One of my favorite Norwegian academic missteps in the English language is when people are trying to say analysis.
Oh, yeah.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So, yeah. What is that obvious, what I hinted to there? Or do I have to explain it?
No, I think I'm with you. We'll move on. Yeah. If it helps, there are a lot of words in English that native speakers find pretty hard. Statistics is one that a lot of people really struggle with, and statistical.
How?
Just some people find it hard to say. I've met several people who find it very difficult to say the word statistics or the word statistical without stumbling over it.
What do they say instead?
I can't even do it.
Okay, yeah, right.
I can't. Sorry. Let's get someone on the show who can't pronounce it, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
that sounds cruel. That's not what I meant at all. You know.
So if you should roll the dice on Tre Nøtter til Askepott, do it have the small differences endorsement, or should we find another movie?
Oh no, it's great. It's, you know, kind of charming and old school, but quite fun, and the narration is a little bit tongue in cheek, and it was delightful. Highly recommended.
Also hats.
Oh my god, we have to link to the hats in this movie. There are some insane hats. Yes. It's going in the show notes. The other thing that we watched on recommendation as apparently being a traditional watch at Christmas was it's called here Grevin and which is a bit weird, and Hovmesteren, which is is it spinster and butler or
yes, yeah, something like that. The official name is Dinner for One in England. Yeah.
Which is this thing from, what, the late 40s, early 50s, UK, with the sort of rich, wealthy spinster with the butler who caters to her imagination that she's enjoying a pleasant meal with several people and becomes progressively more drunk as he drinks everyone's drinks and toasts her back.
Good evening, Miss Sophie, good evening.
Good evening, James.
You're looking very well this evening, Miss Sophie.
I'm feeling very much better, thank you, James. Good. Well, I must say that everything looks very nice.
Thank you very much, Miss Sophie, thank you.
Is everybody here?
They're all here waiting for you, Miss Sophie, yes.
Sir Toby.
Sir Toby is sitting here, Miss Sophie, yes.
Admiral von Schneider.
Admiral von Schneider is sitting here, yes.
Mr. Pomeroy.
Mr. Pomeroy, I've put round here for you.
And my very dear friend, Mr. Winterbottom.
On your right, as requested, Miss Sophie.
Thank you, James. You may now serve the soup.
Thank you, Miss Sophie. It's all ready for you. Some of your favourite soup, I believe.
I sent it to my dad and he loved it. I am not the target audience for this, but my dad is totally the target audience.
Yeah, I guess we'll have an episode on humor and comedy later.
Yes.
But what does this tell you about the Norwegian spirit, that this is kind of the thing that everyone watches every lille julaften?
I don't know. I recognize it as a form of comedy, but as we will get into, I think, when we talk about humor as a kind of a topic for a show, I'm really not good at uncomfortable or kind of pretense-based comedy. I find it very difficult to watch.
Did you manage to walk through this office?
Watched one episode and just went, I've lived this. I cannot watch this for leisure time. I've been in that office. No.
Huh.
Also, nope.
Well, yeah, I guess we have to table it, but...
We'll come back to that, and I can squirm some more on my seat. I'm doing a good deal of squirming. I realize that doesn't come across too well on the podcast, but yet there's squirming happening right now.
Well, you have a pillow present.
You think I should do the decent thing and just take myself right out? That's fine.
Is that a thing in the world, like the... to have a pillow close to you to sort of hide behind when you are either afraid or like uncomfortable with the weirdness?
For watching TV specifically?
Yeah, I guess it's a bit early for... well, I just have the word for the week. Can I take mine now?
Yeah.
My word for the week is...
Pillow TV or cushion
pillow,
TV.
Yeah. Is that a thing in the English language?
Not directly. We have the concept of hiding behind the sofa.
For scary stuff, right?
Which is the same thing. Like when you're a kid and you're watching Doctor Who and you're scared out of your mind. Yeah, it's the kind of the idea that you're sort of hiding behind the sofa and just peeking out from behind it to see and then going away again and then coming
back
up to look.
This is not about scary stuff, you see.
Oh.
This is about embarrassing stuff.
Oh.
Like,
God, do we need that concept in the UK? Good grief. Yes, we do. Right. Everyone start saying puta TV from now on because, yeah.
So The Office, I guess, is pillow TV or puta TV.
Faulty or, Towers.
Yeah, or any kind of sex scene with your parents would be puta TV.
I've tried never to watch sex scenes featuring my parents.
me neither, but yeah.
Yeah, don't you watch sex scenes featuring my parents. That's only making me more uncomfortable. I'm sorry, I'll park the dangling modifier jokes. We can move on.
Right. Let's table that for the episode on Norway and sex, which will be a hit. I guess.
I guess so. Is that the same or different as the swearing episode?
I fear that I have to do quite a lot of editing this for this Christmas special.
Mm.
Are you having beer?
It was a bit early. I could be persuaded to go and get one in a bit. I currently have a cup of tea. I'm on top of the most glorious caffeine high after having been to a diner for brunch and they had bottomless coffee, so I drank bottomless coffee. But I could switch to beer in a moment. So no on the beer. How about you?
I have a beer.
Kind of beer?
Nøysom.
Mm.
American pale ale. Yeah.
Is it actually brewed in America or is it brewed
just,
here under license?
Just the type. It's a local beer, I think. No, it's not local. It's Fredrikstad.
Oh, that's down ours. They're under some water at the moment, I gather, after the storm.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the eastern part of the country had a storm too.
We did. We had we had some winds. We had some waves. The water, the fjord, went up about a meter briefly, and there we're back. Oh, I knew what I was going to say to you this morning. My husband, I'm almost always the first person up in the morning because I do mornings, and he doesn't like him so much. I had got a message from you to say that, you know, we were still on for the record today after the potential for power outages yesterday. And so he came through and I said, oh, so the news this morning is, and he stopped me and he said, I don't want any more news this year. I've had so much news from you this year. Every news has been, hey, good morning. I'm really sorry to tell you, but Trump won the election. Hey, good morning. I'm really sorry to tell you this, but we voted for Brexit. Hey, good morning. I'm really sorry to tell you this, but David Bowie has died. George Michael has died. Prince has died. So this has been the whole tenor of our conversation, right, the whole way through the year. But I have to tell him unpleasant news first thing in the morning. So when I said to him, so the news this morning, he was like, no, I don't want to hear it. And I was like, no, Bergen has electricity. It's good news.
Hmm.
Anyway.
the only good news this year.
It's the only good news.
Managed. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. It's been a year.
Mm.
And we will have another one. Of those
it cannot
years,
be
perhaps.
More complicated than this year.
So, you've written The Snowman.
Yeah. We had a little conversation here about, is there an equivalent to Askabot in the UK? Is there a movie that everybody has to kind of watch that is the traditional Christmas time watch? And the closest that we could get is a thing called The Snowman, which you might have seen here. It's from the 80s. It's based on a Raymond Briggs book called The Snowman.
This and is it's the about... song.
Yeah, this is the yeah. song. Yeah. But it has, you know, a whole cartoon thing. And when I was a kid, it was the thing to watch at Christmas time. It was super exciting that it was on TV. I don't know if it's still cool.
It's also aired in Norway. This is a walking in the air
that's the one.
Tune.
Yeah.
I think that's my wife's favorite Christmas song, I think, actually.
Mm.
We have translated that song into Norwegian as well.
Is the whole thing dubbed when it plays?
No, I think it's I think it's dubbed.
Mm. I mean, it's animated, right? There's no reason why you wouldn't.
Mm.
Also, it's for kids, who can be forgiven for not having perfect English yet, I think.
Yeah. So this is your...
Well, it was when I was a kid. I don't know now. Mm. The problem with the kind of the boom, not a problem, but a consequence of the boom in media channels has been that I'm not sure anyone watches all the same show. The only other thing is the Queen's speech on Christmas Day. So 3 p.m. every year, the Queen gives a broadcast about the year and I guess the state of the nation. And because of the way our royal family is, which I guess we'll get into in another episode, it's usually pretty tedious.
But you have something else. You have the concept of the Christmas special, right?
Yeah, right. Where like your TV show is this where your TV show kind of does a special episode that even if it hasn't run for 6 months, they kind of they make a Christmas episode that plays at Christmas of that show. Yeah, I guess I am so the last person you want to be talking to about British TV, which I just have not watched.
Because you just read books.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Did I come across like someone who's like, oh, no, I'm too pure for your television?
You did. It sounded like you didn't have a TV when you grew up, so I guess...
No, we did. We did, but we didn't have a VCR, and, there was only so much TV that I was either allowed to watch or wanted to watch. So I did other things a lot of the time.
For our young listeners, Netflix hasn't always existed.
This is going to be hard to explain to young people in 20 years.
Yeah, we have to walk outside to a dedicated store where we could rent movies.
We had to walk up to the television and change the channel by touching the box that the pictures came out of.
And it was not a touchscreen.
And you had no control over when the pictures would come out.
Also, all the TV was pretty boring. But we watched it anyway.
Some of it was cute.
Yeah, so you aren't into all the Doctor Who and the Sherlocks and what have you? Do they have EastEnders Christmas special?
Oh, God, probably. Maybe this is another episode, like the extent to which I'm completely divorced from UK TV culture. I don't care. I don't like most of it. I'm a terrible Brit.
That seems to be a thing that every Brit I know says about themselves.
Interesting. In what ways do other British people think that they're failing at being British?
Well, I'm not sure, but it's something to do with not feeling. Well, you have to explore this, I guess. But it seems to be a thing among you Brits that you are thinking of yourself as failing as being British.
Just out of interest, is your sample mostly composed of people who are no longer living in the UK?
That and those who are in the university or the academy, I guess.
In the UK.
Yeah, in the UK. Yeah.
And just wish they were not in the UK.
Something like that.
Or in the academy, quite possibly.
I don't have a representative sample. It's your point, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm at the point where I don't know what a representative sample would even look like.
But, yeah, I guess we should take the opportunity to explore what it entails to be a Brit.
Hmm. Can you tell me some things that you think are characteristic of British people? Use extreme stereotypes if it serves your purpose. No prejudice.
Well, you think you own the world? No.
But you see, you make that like a joke, but we did used to, and there seem to be some people who are still a little bitter about the fact that we no longer do. It's the 21st century. Get used to it. We're not an empire anymore. It's probably fine. Don't worry about it.
And, you got it. Well, you should probably enjoy or at least feel obligated to have tea.
Well, I'm drinking tea right now, so yeah. I guess I can check that one off the list. It's not a huge priority for me. I'm a coffee person, first and foremost. But it's like a central thing. And if something has gone terribly wrong at the small scale or the big scale, then the classic British thing to do is to make that person a cup of tea.
Hmm.
Which it turns out, a former colleague of mine researches what happens to people under extreme duress. And one of the best things you can do is actually make someone a cup of tea with lots of sugar in it, because the glucose is really, really useful in forming their memories of that process and insulating them against subsequent trauma. There you go.
Keep calm and drink some more tea, I guess.
Yeah, again, the keep calm thing is just so overplayed.
Or drink tea and keep calm, perhaps.
At least that preserves the kind of causal relationship there, right? Yeah. Yeah, we can go around and just fix all these posters. Mostly by burning them, I think.
I think there's something in those posters that tells us something about the generalized true Brit.
What do you think it says?
About not being to be understated and calm and
Are we understated and calm?
You tell me. Or I don't know. This is a problem because I have a really, really difficult time to accept or pretend that about these generalizations, right?
Right. They don't. When you start exploring them, they don't stand up often.
I'm ruined by the humanities or something.
Ruined by the humanities is a future episode. Also,
I'm extreme relativist, so it's just people. Same. They are like the same and different everywhere.
Right. Yeah. I think I don't know. I can't truthfully say that any of the stereotypes are true or not. They are sometimes a little bit true for some people I know, but I don't know everyone. Yeah, I'm a hardcore relativist, and I also, as a former scientist, I don't have enough data.
So the curious thing for me is to sort of to. I think the inherent Britishness will reveal itself in where you are surprised about something you discover in your process to sort of are you is this your project to be integrated?
I think that would be a long-term goal. Is to pass unnoticed. Sounds a little sinister, but you know, like, that would be the perfect thing, to just disappear and to not have to think about how to be.
Hmm.
I mean, always one should think about how to be, but you know what I mean, like to just exist in Norway without constantly thinking, oh, that's different, oh, that's different.
But are you constantly thinking that?
Only small things.
Because,
like,
yeah.
Like, culturally, there was a, before the Brexit referendum, there was a piece of research carried out by 538, Nate Silver's research organ, I guess, in the US, and they polled attitude stuff, or they, I don't know where they got their data actually, whether they conducted the polls themselves or whether they did it through existing data, and they identified that London and Scotland were basically politically the same, of the same orientation, which I thought was really, really super interesting. And what that means is London is also very, very like Scandinavia, because Scotland and Scandinavia are extremely similar, like to the point where I kind of have the secret dream that Scandinavia will finally rescue Scotland and just say, it's fine, come and be part of us. You fit right in. You know, you're socialist, you believe in taxes that support education and progressive taxation, and you're very internationalist and blah, blah, blah. Wait, where did this thread start? This is the problem with how much coffee I've drunk today. What was my point?
I think there was a point about being integrated and, yeah.
Right. The surprises are not big ones.
Mm.
Because this is not a foreign, it's not a very foreign country. I've been to places, I've been to India, I've been to Turkey, both of which were to a white middle class woman from the UK, very foreign.
Mm. Mm.
And this is not foreign in that way, no capital F on foreign.
Well, we tried to we had an attempt like 900 years ago, but I guess that didn't pan out.
Well, I don't know. You left some of your stuff behind, I think.
We took some stuff as well.
Yeah, it was a little cultural exchange program, just quite a violent one, I guess. For all I know, you're the reason I have red hair. Not you personally. That would be weird.
Yeah. My descent is from Spain, actually. So I had very little to do with it, I think. Who knows?
That's a good get-out clause. Yeah, what were your forebears doing 900 years ago?
I don't know about 900 years ago, but well, I don't know if this is revealing or not, but on my mother's side, they were a Spanish house lady and someone in the royal family out there. Having a thing, and she got pregnant and sent to this farmer in Norway. And
wow.
Yeah. One thing led to another.
Is someone going to come to you one day and offer you, like, the throne of Spain?
Yeah. There's a chance.
Nice.
If that were to come in fruition, I guess there would be a pretty large disaster, and perhaps not so much of a monarchy to inherit, but yeah. Hmm. Right, moving on.
Wow, we went down another hole.
Yeah, pretty deep one, I guess. This is the Christmas special, so should we sort of tune back into the Christmas channel?
I think we should. I think we should. There are some questions that I want to address here.
Yeah.
You've written, this made me laugh a lot, that Christmas tree we send you every year, do you even care?
Yeah.
We care. We love the tree. It's bigger than any trees in the UK. Thank you so much for the tree.
What tree is this? Those who are not following along.
Well, this, I think this is a few trees. There's one in London. There's certainly one in Edinburgh. Because my dad and stepmom went to look at it being turned on, as they often do every year. They put lights on and it's like a whole thing and someone makes a speech and blah, blah, blah. And as I understand it, this is a kind of a gesture of solidarity that dates back to, I think, World War II and the collaboration. Collaboration is such a loaded word. What's samarbeid? I don't know what the word is. You're not helping.
We send multiple trees?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's just one, because Edinburgh gets one, but I think London gets one as well.
Well, I knew about the London one, the Trafalgar Square.
Right, we've always had one in Edinburgh as well.
Hmm. Is that from us?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, like some dude from Norway stands up and there's a whole thing. And yeah, I'm sorry, like, is this upsetting to you in this country of like 50,000 million trees that we're not giving one but two trees to the UK? Outrageous.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised, but it's a bit under-communicated, I guess.
At this end.
Because every year there's this congratulatory bit on the news that, this year, again, we sent a tree to London and people are so grateful and happy and we are so great and we know our trees and stuff like that. But, yeah.
I'm laughing because it sounds as though, like, in the UK, we've never seen a tree before. We're like, thank you, Norway. Thank you for trees. This is amazing. And truthfully, they are very impressive trees. These are huge conifers that of a size that just does not really grow in the UK. They are impressive.
And you make all your houses from brick, so...
stone in Scotland. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm tutting.
But you do care about the trees, even those who he perhaps not sent. But I cannot find anything about the Edinburgh tree.
You think I'm making this up now, don't you? I'm going to find a link.
Or this is like a conspiracy.
The problem is when I type, it sounds like a stampede. I don't know what you're doing with the typing, but I can't hear you type at all. But when I try and type and do a Google search while we're recording, it's awful. It's unbearably noisy.
Freshly cut Norman fir Christmas trees, Edinburgh. So I guess Norwegian trees are like a brand? Huh.
Here you go. Here's your story. In your face, Norway. Norwegian Christmas trees in the UK. The Norwegian Christmas tree in Trafalgar Square is world famous. Since 1947, the pine tree in central London has been a gift from the people of Norway in recognition of Britain's support during World War II. However, that is not the only Norwegian Christmas tree in the UK. There are a range of Norwegian Christmas trees around the UK every year with accompanying lighting ceremonies, and lighting and ceremonies are capitalised.
Huh.
And it lists them all.
We send you guys a forest.
Yeah. Well, we're like tree impoverished compared to Norway, so it's nice that you're spreading the love.
Huh. Well, turns out.
Turns out. The other question I had.
So the question is, do we care about the trees or just the tree?
Well, you only thought you were sending one. Has this changed it? Is this going to change your vote at the next election? Will you support a candidate that promises to reduce the number of trees that are being shipped over to the UK down to one?
I'm not sure, because it's not that I'm negatively surprised. I'm just perplexed or something. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's delightful. I think like the worst thing that you could do was continue to only send one tree to London, because London already gets all the good stuff in the UK at cost of the other parts of the UK getting stuff. So,
and now I'm thinking, do we get anything in return? Or
we can.
I guess this is kind of like, yeah, you helped us somewhat during the war, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that it beginning to be a couple of years ago.
What do you think is a fair exchange? What should we send you back? Tea, perhaps?
Because tea is a British produce.
Yeah, I don't know this. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, so, okay, we go to different parts of the world, but especially places like India, and then we bring all the tea back and we package it up and we say British tea or English breakfast tea or stuff like that. And, like, it's British, but we just grew it overseas in one of our former colonies. Yeah, I don't know how we get away with that. Eventually, that pyramid is going to collapse.
What is a true Brit export or a produce or something?
sarcasm and self-deprecation.
I think we had that before.
Huh. Them's fighting words. We're going to come back to that. What's the difference between we don't hate ourselves? I mean, do you guys? Is the self-deprecation sort of a bit kind of winking, or is it genuinely...
We are not good at self-deprecation, as you hear. we could have some more of that, sure.
Norwegian people seem incredibly humble.
They seem.
Oh, but actually?
But when you are leaving the room...
what happens when you leave the room?
Or just take a peek in the comment sections in the local newspapers and... I bet you will struggle to find the humbleness.
I'm a bit afraid of the comments section on the internet. What on earth? What happens in there?
Well, it's a discourse about how Norway is eternal and the best thing, and that we should not import things from the scary... foreign cultures.
Where foreign is literally any other country or very specific countries?
Well, specific area, perhaps.
You're very careful to avoid saying which area, I notice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's have another episode on Norwegian racism later.
Okay.
And we will unpack the whole thing.
Okay. The other question... And this is a biggie, right? This is a Christmas episode big question. Who brings the presents here? Because you have written this as a short introduction to the Nisse complex. What is Nisse?
Yeah.
What is Julenisse?
So Julenisse is usually translated to Santa Claus, I guess. The Santa.
Is that an old guy in a beard wearing red and white?
Well, yeah. And this is the reason it is a complex, because the word for the Norwegian word for Santa Claus or Santa is Nisse, but that are also an old like mythical creature. For example, the Fjøsnisse, which could be translated to, I guess, the stable nisse or something.
Huh?
Well, back in the days, there used to be a lot of farms in Norway. And with farms and agriculture, you have lots of creatures, like small creatures. Which do...
Small furry creatures or like...
Yeah.
Elves and goblins and pixies kind of creatures?
Those kind of creatures, right?
Okay.
And some of this was nisser. And they could do some mischievous things or some good things, depending on how you treated them, right?
Mm.
This is fairly typical for almost everywhere, I guess. But
you're saying Norwegians have the concept of a house elf.
Yeah, but we call them nisse.
Okay.
And somewhere, not that long ago, I guess, the concept of the nisse sort of overlapped with the concept of Santa Claus. So yeah, we have Santa Claus as well because we have Coke, right? But or. Like in the drink and not
right.
The yeah, but but sometimes
that would explain the lines in the shops today. No, bad joke. So... cut that.
Sometimes it would be the fat guy who climbs down the chimney, but also a more skinny type that perhaps go in through the door or something like that. But to roll back to the presents or the gifts, I guess that would be the Coke Nisse.
Okay.
Before in Norway we had the opposite thing.
Mm-hmm.
if you have been bad, there would be this goat-like creature who came by and punished you and gave you some coal or something.
Right. I think we have the idea in the UK that Father Christmas, Santa, whoever, will leave you a lump of coal if you have been bad.
Well, I think it was coal and some whipping, actually.
Wow, hardcore. You guys don't mess around. I have to ask you, is the Nissa who brings the presents, are they human?
Like in real life, or
well, like is the kind of the idea that this is a person, and that to the extent that Father Christmas exists, obviously kids listening, he don't listen to this show, please. There's just so much in here you shouldn't be listening to. But if there are any kids listening to this show, then yeah, Father Christmas totally exists. Yeah, is human, right? To the extent that he exists, but you're describing a thing that doesn't sound entirely human.
I think that's the correct designation. Not entirely human. Or superhuman, if you want. But yeah, more like that.
So this brings me to my next question. Christmas gifts. I have this impression, it's really hard to qualify, that Norway is quite new at capitalism.
What do you mean by that?
It's really hard to unpack. I'll try. That you get it, you know, there's Christmas gifts and there's all the things that I associate with being in the UK in terms of, you know, being able to go shopping and stuff, but there's just little hints here and there, like you've still got kind of very restrictive Sunday trading laws, you know, like most shops are shut. It smells a little bit socialist, and I don't know, there's a little bit of a sense that the kind of commercialization of everything, not just Christmas, is a relatively recent thing, and that prior to that, there was much less focus on the commercial, and that's well within living memory, maybe more recently than in the UK. Is this making any sense?
Yeah, well, we have that conversation, right? Now Christmas is all about the commercial things, like spending a lot of money on gifts and food, and it comes earlier and the Christmas food comes earlier and earlier. Now we can buy Christmas chocolate in October, for God's sake, right? We have that conversation,
right?
Which I guess would mean that we are perhaps new at capitalism, because if you had capitalism for a while, this conversation perhaps would have passed?
I don't know. In the UK, there is this annual kind of wail of pain when in September or whatever, it's revealed that Marks and Spencer now has their Christmas decorations available to buy, or you can buy Christmas cakes or whatever, you know. But it does seem to get earlier every year. But I feel like that we haven't quite worked back to sort of September, August in this country yet. Like maybe it's middle of October or something. I don't know if that's a measure, if that's any measure of the degree of commercialization. But like when you were a kid, how commercial was Christmas, if you can remember?
Less commercial, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, same here. I think it's changed in our lifetimes, but like how much less?
Well, it is tied with well, people generally has more money now to spend. So yeah, and well, my memory is that Christmas, it began in December, and the amount of gifts were not nearly as much as it is now, and there was less Christmas branding.
What do you mean by Christmas branding?
Well, that you can sort of buy the Christmas version of everything, right? Of your favorite chocolate or...
I mean, I have the same experience. I don't know if it's any different here than there. There's just something about being here that feels like it's a more recent thing, and I cannot put my finger on it. If you are listening and you can tell us why, please write in. Explain to us. Explain to me, anyway.
And it's also fairly recent that the shops may actually can have opened to be open on Sundays in December.
Right.
Yeah, because that is a thing.
Mm. I was a little surprised that that was the case. And open late into the evening, some of them as well, right?
Mm.
So to maximize your shopping time.
Yeah, also, we have this kind of tax system where the government... way it works that the government is sort of holding back money. So they sort of... We have a higher tax for the rest 11 months. And in December, you just pay half tax.
Yeah.
Even though it evens out the whole year. But so you get... You have more money on your bank account in December.
Yeah, I was kind of really interested by this when this came up at work, that simultaneously, like, yes, I'm going to have more money this month, and also, wow, that is interesting. That's a very big government thing to do. That's a very paternalistic thing for government to do, to say, we will organise your taxes such that you have more money available to spend, well, I assume to spend in December on Christmas, right? And on the one hand, that's good for the economy because it stimulates the economy because people buy things and that's nice. But on the other hand, I don't know, it's a very kind of, it's an interesting thing to do.
Is this like the socialism?
Maybe because, a little bit.
Because it's sort of, it isn't socialism in that it's sort of, it's something to sort of stimulate the economy and make people actually spend more.
Right, it's hardcore capitalism, but it's done in a really socialist way. It's like, here, we've decided that the best thing for you is to have more pay to take home this month. And we have decided that as government, we're not leaving it to you, and we're not letting you spend, you know, decide when and how to spend your money. We're specifically focusing you at this problem in this way.
Hmm.
It's fascinating. In my head, when I saw that you had written the Nyssa complex and then we were going to talk about Christmas, I realised that the obvious logical conclusion of this is a thing called the Nyssa industrial complex, which is, you know, this whole arrangement of kind of capitalism and big government that's kind of supporting Christmas in Norway.
Yeah, and another thing is that we have claimed Santa. So Santa lives in Norway, or his mailing address is in Norway.
According to you guys.
According to us, and you know, all that's those from outside that sends letters to him.
You know, it's actually just a forwarding address, and he really lives at the North Pole, right? It's just it's just a post box, that's it. It. Like, they just unload it every day, and they take the stuff out, and they leave the country with it, and they take it to the North Pole.
Yeah, but we own the North Pole, don't we?
Do you? Who owns the North? I have no idea who owns the North Pole. I can't even say North Pole. Great. Yeah, we'll cut that out.
So we have claimed Santa, and I guess the Finns has claimed Santa as well. But yeah.
Does Lapland come into Norway properly? I know there's a Sami, there's like a whole Sami population and stuff, but where does Lapland stop? I know it's in Finland, I know it's in Sweden. Is there any Lapland in Norway?
Yeah, of course. So if you're talking about the indigenous concept of Lapland, where it is, or the geographical area where the Samis belong, or that would be Norway, Finland, Sweden, and Russia, actually.
And what's the overlap between that area and where Santa lives, according to Finland?
I have no idea, and I don't think those two concepts or ideas are related.
So Lapland means many things to many people.
What do you mean? What does it mean to you?
Well, culturally, primarily, it's where Santa Claus might live, except he might also be at the North Pole, so it's kind of confusing. But actually, when I was a kid, Greenland was another suggestion. Like, it was totally legit that Santa might live in Greenland. This whole thing is a lie, man. We've been fed inconsistent information. Yeah. I want the truth.
This is interesting, because I have studied, like, indigenous religions and taking a course on Sami religion and stuff.
Mm.
So Lapland, for me, is a bit politically problematic, is perhaps the wrong word, but that's another thing. That's a political category tied in with colonization and all that stuff. So it doesn't overlap with this Santa myth.
Overlap.
But I see now that it's a thing.
Yeah, from outside Scandinavia, Lapland, I think, is primarily known for snow and reindeer and Santa Claus.
Mm. Mm.
Or Father Christmas, if you're traditional British, I guess. Santa Claus is much more American English, but I think increasingly it's synonymous.
And, Father Christmas.
Mm. Mm. Or St. Nicholas, I'm still fascinated by this concept of the person bringing your presents as being not entirely human. That's a really interesting kind of tweak on the more Western or the more kind of Central European approach. Mm.
Because in Norway, you have two versions of the Nissa. You have the Nissa, which is the neighbor in the beard and a red suit, right?
Mm.
Coming over with the presents, which is, I think that is an American import.
Okay.
But you also have the Nissa, where you place a bowl of porridge outside the door.
Right.
And when you wake up or something like that, you do this on Lille Julaften, like the Christmas Eve, right?
Mm.
Place a bowl of porridge outside the door, and the morning after, it's gone.
And is that to keep the that Nissa sweet? To keep them happy? Okay.
Exactly. Sometimes the Nissa may have hidden some gifts, typically these special gifts, which you can find later.
On which day?
On Christmas Eve.
Right. Huh. Do you have stockings?
Yeah, we have them. Also, I guess, a fairly recent import.
And which day does the stocking full of gifts materialize?
Our stockings is typically filled with candy, and that would be Christmas Eve morning.
Wow. Everything is upside down.
Yeah, you wake up, there's the stockings filled with candy, you eat the candy while watching television.
This sounds good.
Mm.
I like it. This is how I want to spend my Christmas Eve. Also eating porridge, but not the porridge left out for Nissa, because, you can't eat that.
Unless you are a Nissa.
Mm. Mm. I couldn't possibly comment. Speak to my agent.
The Hygge Backlash.
Yeah. Hi, Will, by the way. I feel like we should name check our colleague here. Will took one for the team and went back to the UK from Norway this Christmas, and there's hygge everywhere. Everywhere. It has spread from Scandinavia into the UK, but it turns out apparently we're not very good at it in the UK. And the backlash against this concept and about what it's supposed to mean has begun in the UK. So quick recap, hygge, concept of kind of coziness and snuggliness and candles and soft furnishings and nice ways to spend the long dark evenings. But apparently in the UK, I know, it's overused already. It's in every magazine article.
This is a bit baffling for me because, of course, for me, hygge is indigenous concept or something we don't necessarily think that much about. We just do it. And it has become a thing in the UK. It's like, Is it a furniture catalog thing or a IKEA thing? Or
Highly commercial, first of all. Like, I think that's probably the first mistake, is to think, okay, right, this is just, the concept is just products that you can buy. That would be my guess. But also, I don't know, there's this concept, and I think it's probably a myth, but it's a really pervasive myth, that Scandinavians generally are just kind of effortlessly cool, and they just do all this, they just achieve all this with, like, zero effort. Is that actually true?
Well, yeah. I actually think so. Well, to a degree.
It's impossible to tell how hard any of you are trying at this.
But to me, it seems like, well, just that is just spending an evening inside, or something like that. But what comes with hygge? What would differ hygge, a hyggelig evening from a typical British evening?
I guess stereotypically there would probably be candles, and there would probably be really well matched kind of blankets and cushions and stuff. That's really vague. It's a really hard concept to nail down, which is maybe the thing that makes it difficult to execute well. If you're not, like, culturally, if it's not part of your natural cultural environment, then maybe it's just really hard to kind of bootstrap it, you know?
Yeah, I guess you have to hold your cup with both hands.
Right, right.
Just while, under your nose.
While wearing like really comfortable but also incredibly classy looking clothing.
Mm.
Yeah, well, the UK is going to fail right there. You can have comfy or you can have classy clothing. In the UK, I don't think you can have both. Not in the same garments. Someone's going to write in very angry. Sorry, please don't write in.
You can get some really, really expensive cozy clothing in Norway.
Yeah, I've seen some of it. Some of our colleagues wear it. Some of it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if that's the expensive stuff. It's just really nice. We have some very nicely dressed colleagues. Hi, colleagues.
Well, if you're successful at snowboarding, you can create a clothing line selling pretty expensive, cozy clothes.
I think the closest I'm going to get to that is, like, hanging up my clothes on a clothing line.
Yeah, I guess that was the wrong term.
No, a line of clothing, absolutely perfect.
You're just making on the pun train.
I'm riding the pun train, and I see what you did there, because you've just highlighted the word that says "eulatalk."
I'm usually on the pun train, but I guess I'm not used to other people being on the pun train.
We will have an entire pun episode, but no one will ever download anything further after that.
The eulatrain, what is that?
Okay, this is a word I just made up, but it was because from our apartment we look out onto a rail track and we can see the tram, and I noticed that on Christmas, on Første Juledag and Andre Juledag, there were trains, there were trams, there was public transport functioning, I don't know, as normal, maybe less frequently than usual, but it was still happening. And it was a bit surprising to me, because in the UK, pretty much nothing, like maybe there are some buses, but not very much on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Not a lot of public transport happens. Trains don't really happen a lot. Like, there's a little bit, but not very much. And I was surprised to see stuff just, you know, going as usual.
I haven't thought about that. Also, well, I guess there are less public transport going on, but well, not everyone is celebrating Christmas, you know.
They don't in the UK either. But I guess that's their hard cheese, right? That's just how that goes.
People have to get places.
Yeah.
So yeah, because I thought it was like the human train, like. Because a parade in Norwegian could also be termed train or tog. So I thought that this was kind of a parade of people celebrating Christmas. I don't know what people do in Oslo, so yeah.
Maybe like a very, very aquavit-fueled conga line?
Yeah, something like that. That isn't a thing, but it should be a thing.
I think so. I think so. Let's make it a tradition.
Did you have any aquavit?
No, we haven't. To my shame, I still haven't been to Vinmonopole, actually. And now I'm paranoid. I've just used a Swedish word. That is the right word, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
In Swedish, it would be Systembolaget. No,
thank you. Except they pronounce the T because they're like that.
But yeah, aquavit. It's actually the first liquor I tended to like.
Wow.
I'm not a big liquor person, but yeah.
What do you like about it?
The taste.
Can you describe the taste for people who've never
It's spicy, I guess. This is potato liquor.
How is it different from vodka?
I think it's vodka from potatoes.
It can be.
Well, yeah.
Not the usual.
Well, but to qualify as aquavit, it has to have been traveled in, so we send it on boats, and you had to cross the equator and come back again in the barrels.
What?
And yeah, it's and something with the temperature and stuff like that gives it the characteristic taste of aquavit, and there's also some spices in it. But yeah, it has crossed the equator.
What?
In ship. So it comes with a pretty large carbon footprint. Yeah.
I'm speechless.
Life water.
I'm completely speechless. What is the equator thing all about?
Well, they say it's about temperature, and I guess that the fact that it has traveled over the equator by ship means that it is stored for a while. But yeah.
Is it stored in a particular kind of... like if you were making whiskey, you might store it in an oak cask or in a sherry cask, or...
I'm not sure about the cask, which type it is, but... yeah. And on the bottles, you actually... They have printed the name of the ship who has carried it.
Wow.
Hmm.
Is this something to do with Norway being a great seafaring nation?
Yeah.
This is fascinating. Yeah. I had no idea. Now I have to get a bottle.
Yeah, you have. You can get the bottle, for example, Linje Akvitt, which is sort of one of the most usual. There are many, I guess, there are many brands and types, but yeah.
Hmm. And was this something you had at your julebord or Christmas dinner? Or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how is it drunk? So do you sip it? Do you knock it back in one? What?
I think the proper way is to sip it, because you drink it for the taste and to sort of freshen your mouth in between all the...
Heavy implication that is not what actually happened.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the same effect as the ginger when you're eating sushi.
Oh, okay, it's a palate cleanser, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I don't know if it actually is, but it feels like that.
Hmm.
And it goes really well with beer.
Together?
Yeah.
You have like one a little sip of beer and a little sip of aquavit, or...?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. There is a Scottish concept of a half and a half, where you have half a pint of beer, depending on, like, I don't know, 80 shilling ale or something like that, and a little half a whiskey. And you drink them together. Not in the same glass. We're not animals.
Yeah, because there are some people who drop a glass of liquor into the beer, and that's an...
Does that have a name?
Abomination, I think.
Abomination is a fair name, but...
Yeah. Why would you? But, yeah. So, yeah, that there's the small differences, Christmas, advice, tip.
Mm, go, it's a good one.
Buy some aquavit.
Nice.
And have yourself a hyggelig evening.
Indeed. I had whiskey, but I had it after dinner. I wouldn't have had it with dinner. Okay, I'm making notes. Better Christmas next year. Assuming we're still here and haven't been kicked out of the country, because Lord knows when the Brexit thing is going to drop.
You could, if that happens, which we of course hope it don't, but you could have a Norwegian Christmas in the UK.
Crying into my turkey. Don't even, yeah. There are some things we didn't do on the list. Sorry, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm a bit done with Christmas now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm ready for the New Year.
What happens at New Year here? Is it a big deal?
Yeah, at Christmas, that's where we have the hygge. It's a very hygge-focused holiday. And New Year's is when you get drunk.
And there's no hygge at all?
Well, of course there are hygge, but no.
The focus is just purely alcohol.
Among the youth, at least. Or, I don't know about the youth nowadays, because they are so proper and focused on achieving, but in my day...
I'm sorry, back up, wait, what? Young people are far too focused,
yeah,
what?
Young people today in Norway are really, really boring. They're like best friends with their parents, they focus on school, they don't drink, they are eating healthy.
Why?
I'm worried about them growing up to be fascists, actually. So this is my rant. Yeah, we have this concept of generation perfection, or the generation of perfection. And yeah.
Is that the current, where would you, is this like people up to maybe 25 right now, or how old are these people?
A bit younger, perhaps.
Okay, like, maybe under 20?
Yeah, like teenagers.
Okay, and why has this happened?
Is
this real? Going back to our concept of relativism, how do you know this is real?
It's
people writing into the newspapers does not count.
I think there has been studies.
Okay.
At least I think we drink less. The youth drink less, and I think, well, from what I heard and the impression I got myself. And my wife is a teacher in videregående skole, which would be middle school, perhaps.
That's a very
like 16 to 18.
It would be the same as high school. Yeah. In the UK, the closest thing I could think of would be a further education college. But the implication with further education is most of these kids will not go to university from there. So I don't think there's a good fit. Because at the videregående, a lot of kids will probably go on to university, right?
Yeah, and it also covers the vocational programs,
right? So it doesn't separate out kids into sort of an academic stream and a non-academic stream the way that we probably would in the UK to the same degree. Anyway, I'm sorry, your wife teaches English.
So I think there are less drinking and more focus on achieving and being successful and stuff like that.
Where does this come
There's
from?
More pressure. I'm not sure.
Parents?
Yeah, probably. I think it's yet again a function of the kind of wealth and political climate, I guess, in a way.
Can you say more about that?
Can I?
You don't have to.
I have to think about that.
Okay.
But so when I was young, Not that I'm that old, but there were some tendency to you sort of you could have you could protest your parents' generation and stuff like that. I guess it was declining, but it was not like in the 70s or 60s or 80s, but that you haven't anymore.
Why not?
I don't know.
There's nothing to rebel against? Is that what you're saying? Or
yeah.
Is that because everyone's just so damn reasonable?
Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know.
This is huge.
It is.
I can't even talk with authority about the UK equivalent. I'm just stumped.
Yeah. But it, as always, as we will perhaps come back to when we are entering the cultural picks of the week, is that, well, you have youth that sort of fall outside the educational system and are not identifying, are not focused on a career and going to higher education and all that, but are more, especially in the not urban areas in Norway, there's a general thing going on with the youth.
Yeah. Let's talk about the cultural picks of the week, because this is really interesting. I picked a couple of tracks, which we'll link to on YouTube, which are by a band called Dorlivan, which I think means bad habit, right?
Yeah.
I was in a store, and one of these tracks started playing, and I was fascinated because there was someone rapping in Norwegian, which is not a thing I hear all the time. Obviously, there are loads of artists here making music in Norwegian, but it's not necessarily the first thing you hear. And it was really urban. It was really, really urban, but it wasn't urban like I might expect. It was urban with a dialect that was not from Oslo. So in the UK, if you're listening to urban music, there's a really good chance it's coming from London. And it sounds a particular way that's associated with a kind of a much more kind of streets-based way of speaking in London. But it's still London. And this was weird because I was listening to music that sounded really urban, and Oslo is like, it's not the only urban centre in Norway, but it's the biggest by far. And here was this thing that just sounded completely other. And what it is... it's a bunch of guys. It's extremely macho. Like, I do not approve of their attitudes to women. They have some way to go there, I would say. But they're making this music. It's really compelling. It's like the hooks are great. It's really interesting. It's this very masculine focused culture where they hang out together. They go like turn donuts in their cars in a car park. It's really togethery. Like, they're kind of they're a tribe. They're a team. They're all together. And it's really interesting. And it's culturally very, very alien from what people probably think about in the UK, what people probably think Scandinavia is like. If you just watch the video with the sound off and you didn't realise it was in Norwegian, it could be anywhere in any kind of urban centre in the UK, apart from how people look, their faces are different. But apart from that...
Yeah, I was a bit surprised when I saw your picks, but so you have chosen, so this group, they belong to this label called NMG, so this is West Coast rap, this is from Bergen actually, it's a bit interesting because you got this sort of macho stuff. And you also got more... it's like more intellectual, perhaps, things going on with a guy called Lars Vaular. It's really lyrical.
In this or in something else, sorry? You mean in like, Bergen?
It's related. So the way stuff, so all these people are sort of doing things together, and there are overlappings.
Right.
So in this label, I guess.
Right. This is pretty literate. Yeah, like, there's a lot of kind of interesting references in there to like Rome, and you know, there's a whole thing. It's not unsophisticated. It's extremely sophisticated.
Not at all. So yeah, exactly. And so there you have that again, because, well, it seems like your typical macho thing, but when you dive into the lyrics and stuff, well, they have been to school. They have the references, the intertextualities, and so on.
Right.
Not that that is not present in any other rap.
Yeah.
I think rappers get a bad rap.
I see what you did there. Nice. Yeah. It's true. I love rap as a genre. I really, really love it. But simultaneously, it's like, it's hugely problematic. Almost invariably, it comes with a huge amount of sexism and violence, implicit or explicit, and you get the occasional artists who don't go there, like the Beastie Boys, particularly in their later years. Like, that's great victimless rap.
And what you as you said, these guys are rapping in the Bergen dialect, and there you have an example of the dialect in thing in Norway, because you also have rappers who rap in Östad dialect. Jeg vokste opp på en avantgarde, ty krig, ingen far. Mor var bonde og arbeidskar, las bøker og karva blad. Vi hadde mye gras, og jeg spredde drit bokstavlig talt. Og jeg var sirkelsag, hadde høye profil, og var født med høye vokal. And Östad is a really small place on the west coast. And it's really distinct.
I need links.
And I will add the links. And and also there's a rap from the north Norway.
And how is that different? Just in dialect. Kan vi kjøre på eller hva? Skal vi ta kjør tog eller hva? Kan vi ta kjør hardt
og fast som om det var 1940-tida? Trøm på eller hva? Yeah, and the references, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your picks, because it felt like they were a response to mine.
Yeah, it was, because, as you said, what you see is sort of this little snapshot of a little sort of cross a section of Norwegian youth culture, which reminded me about the Torgny Emil Trier trilogy of music videos.
Is there a backstory to these? It feels like there is a little backstory.
I don't know about backstory, but you got this really talented movie director, and this music artist who makes like electronic music, or what you could call it, but these videos, they are documenting some parts of Norwegian culture on the first one, the only game, is from Norwegian car culture. So we got this Norwegian concept of råning, which directly translated would be a play on the female pork or pig.
Okay. Keep going.
I don't know what the connection is, but well, råning is like spending your day in a car. You pimp that car, and you're speeding around, and yeah.
Right. So superficially, this is the same kind of subject matter as Yiki Bakken, right, by Dorlivana, right? But not. But like the expression of it in this video is completely different. Completely different.
So you got this just kids drinking and driving.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, you really have to watch your videos to for this to make sense, I guess. But also, you got another one called Big Day, which shows, a day in the Norwegian graduation ritual or period, what we would call Rus.
Yeah, we need to talk about that on a future episode, unless you want to go into that right now.
The 17th of May special. And again, youth drinking in this special russedress suits, I guess.
I was struck by how female positive these videos were, by the way. Like, the women in these videos are in charge a lot of the time of what's happening. They're enjoying themselves for its own sake. They're not objectified. They're just hanging out, doing their thing. I loved it.
Mm. And the last one I came here is from the northern Norway. So you have some snowmobiles and some Samis. And yeah, a lot of drinking again.
The thing I really liked about this one was how it was really affectionate. It was really visually affectionate for people just kind of doing their thing, young people just living, doing what young people do, like hang out, get drunk. But it was weirdly sweet.
Yeah, and I think it's these videos, they sort of capture something real. Well, it, being a video and a music video is always somewhat stylized, and especially in the only game, the car one, they are obviously showing off, right? But from my own experience, it feels pretty like it is.
Right. I'm really struck by the contrast in tone between the two bands, isn't the right word, but artists, let's say. They're both really real, but they're kind of really not polar opposed, because it's both, you know, young people blowing off steam, but it's, they're just very different in flavor. It's fascinating. And, you know, you get this anywhere in the world, right? Like, there's different subculture flavors everywhere. But yeah, I know this is really compelling. It's really interesting to try and unpack this stuff and figure out what it is that's happening in this country.
Yeah, because I think this show, a bit of Norway that you usually don't get exposed to, I guess. Not in a Norwegian course, at least.
I'd say that your picks are probably closer to the kind of ideal, the platonic ideal of Norway, than my pick. Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, yeah, perhaps. Because Dårlig Vane, they are rappers, so they turn it up to 11, I guess.
Yeah, the other one's only like 8.5, right?
Yeah.
You got to leave something in the can.
Because your ones, there's more of a... They are creating a narrative, right? It's not real in that sense.
There's like a...
They are showing off, right? It's more directed.
Yeah. But also, like, there's a kind of a problem to solve, if you like. There's a, you know, a problem statement, if you like, inherent in the message, whereas the other, the Torgny Trier stuff is very just, here it is, make of it what you will. Just very matter of fact. It's great, though. Oh. I love it.
Right. You have a word or an idiom, perhaps?
Yeah. One of my Christmas purchases to myself, I bought myself Christmas presents, is that bad? Was a huge book. Hang on a minute, I'll tell you what it's called. Is a book that basically just summarizes a whole bunch of idiomatic phrases in Norwegian and does not even, it gives you the courtesy of a line break, but it does not insert any white space. It starts at the front and it goes to the back, and it's like comfortably 200 pages, and just every line is an explanation of an alphabetized Norwegian phrase, and it's amazing. I picked it up in the bookshelf, and I couldn't put it down again without buying it. It's called "Mordet I sin makt," and I struggle a little bit with the title. It's something about words and power.
with the word within your power.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It doesn't. It's really hard to translate, right?
Yeah, it's personally so.
Yeah. Titusen stående uttrykk faste fraser ord og vendinger. There you go. That's the subtitle.
10,000.
Yeah, it's a thick book. You could hurt someone with this book if you dropped it on their toe. Anyway, yeah, from this, I just opened it at a random page, and it had the phrase "Å gå skuddfri," and I thought, that's interesting. That sounds an awful lot like the English "to go scot-free." So I Googled it, like a good little internet citizen, and it is the same phrase. So could you define what you think "Å gå skuddfri" is in Norwegian? Is that a phrase people ever use?
Yeah, it isn't that common, I guess, but it means to sort of to get away with it, right? Or to get away with something,
right? I guess, like, to avoid the kind of the punishment that you are presumably due, right?
Yeah, if you say so.
Well, I mean, that's
I'm awesome at Norwegian idioms here. Right?
it's not well used in English either. Like, it comes up occasionally, but the English. Sorry, go on.
Literally, it means to go away or to walk away without being shot.
Right.
Yeah.
And the English is kind of misleading, because the English is to go scot-free or to be scot-free. And that's always been really confusing, right? Because what does it mean to be scot-free? Is that like free like a Scottish person? What even does that, what's that about?
Or free from the Scottish, perhaps?
Maybe. Well, I think if people in England keep voting for Brexit, then they may get their wish. But yeah, so it turns out that it's actually from something coming back to one of the Nordic languages, and it's not Scot, it's Scot as in shot. So S-K-O-T in Norwegian is shot, right? Like a shot gets fired from a gun. And that's also, it's also skatt, which is tax. And the implication on the thing, which we'll put in the show notes in this link, is that you are getting away without paying taxation. So there's some kind of overlap of being in the firing line, if you like, and paying, having to pay tax if you're in the line of fire. And it's not really about being Scottish at all.
And this explains why it perhaps is not that prevalent in Norwegian, because to walk away without having to pay taxes isn't really something that is celebrated here, because here everyone likes to pay their taxes.
Just less in December.
Right. 2 hours.
Wow. Have we actually hit the 2 hour mark? Not quite, but almost.
Almost.
We should tell people where we live. Not literally, don't be creepy, but you know.
Because we have made references to the show notes and so on.
Yeah.
And where could people find the show notes if they are so inclined?
They could go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm and they will find all the episodes and all the links from the things that we talked about in the show, so you can go and read about those things. And also a link to the Twitter account, which I haven't done very much with over Christmas, I'm ashamed to say, and I must up my game there. And our Twitter account is called Small Forskjeller, which means small differences in Norwegian, and I will now spell that because I'm a masochist. SMAFORSKJELLER. There you go. Gets easier every week.
I just realized that there's a hidden Hygge reference in the in our URL because Fireside.
You're right. That's incredibly Hygge.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice job.
Perhaps that is our tagline. The Hyggelige podcast.
Cute.
Well, we have another hour left of the podcast today.
What do you want to do with it?
Shouldn't that be 3 hours?
Oh, God.
Isn't that in
Think of the children.
Podcast manual?
I don't know. I mean, it's your show. We can do what we like. What do we like?
So, we can't talk about Christmas again for at least a year.
I guess.
Is there anything we haven't covered about Christmas in Norway?
Well, I'm gonna put this out there. I'm a little bit disappointed. I did not get a white Christmas. I'm in Norway. Come on. Where's my white Christmas?
Well, you are in Oslo, so you could expect a white Christmas.
I think it's not unreasonable. It does happen, right?
No. But we have this thing. This conspiracy called climate change, I guess. Or perhaps not. Perhaps it's just natural occurring or variations. I don't know. But it seems it gets less and less snow for every year.
Yeah, Scotland has been the same. It's a shame. I like a white Christmas. I guess
you have to go farther north.
I'm hoping to get at least one weekend. Hmm?
Do you like snow?
I love snow.
You do?
I do. I'm just a big kid. I like running around in snow. I like snowboarding. I like sledging. I like ice skating. I snowball fights, everything.
Forgive my ignorance. Do you snowboard in the UK?
It is possible. Increasingly indoors, you know, those kind of places that are artificially very, very large fridges with some kind of ice scrapings on the floor. But yeah.
Indoors? Huh.
Well, it's too warm outside. So you got to make a big fridge and then fill it with snow.
You do that?
Well, not me personally. I just go there.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about a kind of sustainable concept in the UK, but like they have one of these things in Dubai, which blows my mind.
Doesn't that take
lot
of power?
Yep. I don't even know. Yeah. I'm not sure. I dread to think of the kind of the ozone layer costs of running one of these things, to be honest. But yeah, we do have snow sports in the UK. Perhaps slightly less in Scotland than they used to be, or slightly less reliable snow than they used to be. But yeah, totally a thing. Are you a snow person?
More before. So yeah, the snowboarding thing and all that. And
before
skiing,
what?
I guess.
The way you say that's like before the incident.
Well, before I moved to Bergen and enrolled at the university and gave up civil life.
But you've got a chance
and
again
free
to pick
time
it up.
And yeah,
you got your life back.
I guess. Actually, I bought skis last year.
What kind?
But,
like downhill or cross country or Nordic.
Cross or Nordic, I guess. Mm. The snow has been waiting to fall down from the skies, I guess.
I was seriously thinking about buying some, but I need to know that I'll actually get to use them.
You can get them pretty cheap on Finn.
Mm. How does one learn how to cross country ski? I've only ever done downhill.
You learn it by
falling down, as the usual.
Being so embarrassed that you finally manage to do it.
Okay, it's just shame. It's just pure shame, right? Okay.
Yeah, shame ruin.
Okay, well, I hate shame, so I'll try and learn super fast.
They're actually... I think in the 90s, it was not that uncommon that we... It was a thing that we We took foreigners, like people from countries without snow or skis, and put them on skis and demonstrated how poor they were at skiing on national television. That was a thing.
Wow, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Snow shaming.
Snow shaming.
Is there a Norwegian word for that? Could there be a Norwegian word for that? What would it be?
Yeah. Do you have a suggestion?
No, I mean like to snow shame. If you just literally translated it, what would it be?
Snøskam.
Mm.
Snøskamming. Yeah. Next week, it will be 2017.
Woo!
New year.
Please let it be better than 2016. Actually, I'm telling a lie. 2016 was amazing. I moved to Norway. I got an amazing job. I work with amazing people. It's ace. Just some other things were not so great this year.
I'm a bit tired of that.
The meme of 2016 as being like
2016, yeah.
Well, lots of good stuff happened too.
Yeah.
There's some nice, actually, there's at least one really great post about all the really good things that happened in 2016, and we should totally link to that in the show notes, because you read it and you think, actually, lots of good stuff really did happen this year. It's not a total bust.
Indeed, and what are we doing next week? We haven't really talked about it yet, but...
Yeah. We could talk about your childhood, but that sounds vaguely threatening, as though I'm going to ask you to lie on a couch and express anguish.
Yeah, you are a psychologist, so I guess that would be...
Not in Norway, I'm not. We've just established that. We could talk about social stuff. I don't have a lot of exposure to social stuff outside the workplace in Norway yet, so that might be a good instruction kind of manual for me. There's a callback to something you talked about earlier on, which is obsessive training, running, and hiking. We touched on the snow sports stuff today, but we haven't spoken about this country's utter obsession with sports outside. Oh my God. It's wonderful, by the way.
I think that's a fit topic, because now we have been eating for a month.
Mm. Now the pain begins.
And now the pain begins, and now people will go outside and try to train away the kilos that they have gathered.
This seems
in December.
Like such a moderate country. Do people really put on a lot of weight over Christmas or the run-up to Christmas?
I don't know the numbers, but it's a conception, right? At least, that we have.
Hmm. Seems very antithetical to the whole sort of, is there a Norwegian for logum?
You mentioned that in the first episode, I think. Mm. Sure.
That's good. It's a get-out clause. If you don't have it, you don't have to stick to it. Go nuts. Indulge.
Not in the way they have it in Sweden.
Right.
I think.
Oh, I so want to come back to the kind of Norway-Sweden relationship at some point, but not today.
Right, so next week, fitness, hiking, obsessive training, and the deal with Norwegians and the outdoors,
yeah.
I guess. Mm.
And probably more weather talk.
I think my energy was kind of off this time. Perhaps it's because I'm on holiday and my brain is sort of adapted to the holiday.
It's nice that you're relaxed.
Relaxed. Or it's more...
Or horizontal.
It's like, it's more like a pseudo coma or something like that. Comatose.
Nice.
Right. Proper sign off.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're just at this point, we're just the podcast equivalent of Weekend at Bernie's, right? It's just like. We should sign off. All right.
You have the cold start because you have a, could we have a cold ending?
Long pause. Okay, takk for at du hørte på. Er det noe annet å si? You're leaving me hanging here, dude.
I guess not.
I guess not. All right. We'll talk again in the new year.
Right. Ha det bra.
Ha det.